Welcome to the Narrator Roundtable. I'm Andre, and today I'm joined by my co-hosts, Gail.
Hello.
Kurt.
Hey, Andre. How are you?
Doing well, thank you. And Lindsay.
Hello. So thrilled to be here.
So thrilled to have y'all. This one's going to be a doozy. The lobby was vibing, and I'm so excited to have this conversation. I keep a list of the performances that mark me deeply. The spirals of anger, the wells of truth, the sadness folded away behind smiles. And my time in the booth has been filled with experiences that make me root me in the stories that I tell and that remind me of my own imperfections. And in pursuit of that relationship, I've been coaching. I've been listening to other great performances. I've been honing my skills to feel powerful and honest in my reads. So why does it feel sometimes like we're being punished for going on those journeys? Why does it feel like we're engaged as a Build-A-Bear type product instead of as a performer? Articles like LitHub's recent "Can We Please Put an End to the Overperformed Audiobooks," which mentions Mara Wilson, January Lavoie, and Dion Graham, all well known as dynamic performers, makes really clear that like something fundamental is being misunderstood about what it is that we do in the booth as audiobook narrators. And girl, who better to talk about this with than the actor, director, recent Audie Award winner, Eunice Wong. Thank you for joining us, Eunice.
I'm so excited to be here and talk with you guys about this.
Oh, yay. Eunice is a yogi, writer, a Juilliard drama alum, 8-time Earphones Award winner, the beloved voice behind Vera Wong's Unsolicited Advice for Murderers. She's an acting coach and lecturer, and a thoughtful mind on the craft of audiobooks. We had the pleasure of recording another podcast within an audiobook at the top of last year, and so I'm excited to have her here to spill tea on an actual podcast on the wondrous craft of audiobook performances. So yay! Thank you, Eunice. I want to open the room because before we hit record, there were already some stories flowing, and just start off hearing from y'all about like, what were some of your favorite performances and what brought them alive?
I was blown away by Viola Davis's memoir that she narrated herself. And it's nonfiction, obviously, being memoir. But what really, really struck me about her read was that she brought the text to an entirely different level. Like, I was trying to imagine as I listened to it, I was like, as print, as text, what would this be like on the page for the reader? As opposed to, what am I hearing right now in her voice, in which I can hear her entire life experience when she is saying the simplest words? I mean, like, to paraphrase grossly, something like, I walked to school. You read those words on a page. They're flat. There's not much there. But when you hear Viola say them with the story of what she's about to tell, you hear all of that emotional richness. But the thing about hearing her say it, her own words, was that she brought a complexity to the words and a richness that the print pages could never have brought to a reader, I believe. And it's the same kind of thing, that richness that I believe we as actors want to bring to the text. You know, It brings it into three dimensions. It brings it into reality in a way that sometimes you can't find in just the words on the page. So I was telling everyone about, you have to listen to this audiobook. I don't think it would be the same reading it as a book.
Yeah. I love that. I love that in particular because I think the conversation is ongoing, especially in memoir, about like, should you have a narrator do it? Should you have an author do it? The author is going to bring so much of the lived experience behind the words. And if they don't have the skill that Viola Davis has, what are they going to miss about the rest of the performance too? So I love that she brings that combination of experience and skill to the recording. And it's making me think about how so many people say to approach even nonfiction like it's first person, right? Especially when it's written that way. And that is like one of the ways that we can elevate that text. You're making me think of one of my favorite titles from that I listened to last year. And I'll say too, either a performance you've listened to or a performance you've done, love to hear about either one from anyone else in the room.
Let me tell you about a great performance I did.
Please, though.
I simply can't think of anyone who's better.
One of my favorites from last year was Into the Light. This was written by Marco Shiro and narrated by Alejandro Ruiz. And this book was really interesting because the first 75% of the book seems like it's kind of like a YA literary drama. And to spoil a bit of the end, there's like a magical twist, like a magical realism twist that happens near the end. And there's two things I really love. One, Alejandro Ruiz is very much like a multi-dimensional performer. You get the lived-in reads, you get the character voice, the great casting variety. So you get so much of what I love in audiobooks. And then one of the things that they did too that I thought was really interesting, you know, I think we've all read YA here. There are a lot of, especially like all caps dialogue exchanges and these kind of like high energy, high drama scenes. And Alejandro, who has a lot of experience recording in video games, clearly went and recorded like yelling exchanges with the gain turned down and did like distance oriented kind of performances. And it created this level in this book that is so full of pain and intimacy where the characters kind of got to live a full spectrum. Like, I don't know if you've been in a moment where you're about to record something and like the energy is so high, but like what we're capable of doing in the mic in the context of audiobooks feels like there's kind of like a ceiling, right? Of where we can take that performance. And that one choice that, I think this was produced through Spotify that they let Alejandro do this like gain approach, just lets the energy continue rolling through all of these scenes where, you know, the subtext being that there's like a cult church and that these kids are like navigating manipulation. And so there is a lot of emotion and energy and you roll right through these moments. So even that choice, I think, was such a cool piece of the performance that like really brought it alive.
The titles that I thought of when I saw this question, the first one, which is like the reason I'm a narrator, because it was the first book that introduced me to the idea that like a narration could be a performance, was A Discovery of Witches,
which was on my list too.
Narrated by Jennifer Ikeda, who like, I mean, I'd listened to audiobooks before, but they were more like the traditional, like, old-timey read where it was just the words on the page and there really wasn't much character distinction. Like, she brought so much nuance to all of those character voices, and it's a fantastical story that she made feel so grounded. And I was like, this feels real. This person's voice is telling me a story and I feel like it's real. I feel like it's truth, even though these crazy things are happening. So I loved that performance. The one that just like I still will reference is like the one that has blown me away the most was The City We Became. Robin Miles. Mm-hmm. Just like, I mean, she just slapped us all around and made us her bitch. Like, that book is like, I mean, we say things are a masterclass in doing this craft, but that was like beyond. And actually, while Eunice was talking about Viola Davis, I remembered how much I loved another actress who doesn't do a ton of audiobooks, but like is also just one of those people that knows how to ground a performance, and that's Audra McDonald. Mm-hmm. And I first listened to her in Small Great Things.
Me too.
This is so weird. But like, I also just thought like I was listening to her. And I think when that came out, like I had just had my first audiobook come out. So I was like a narrator now. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, wow, she's doing such a good job at this thing she doesn't normally do. me with like two books under my belt, being like, good job, Audra McDonald.
Good job, Audra. I just want to say, I went to school with Jennifer Ikeda, and she's fabulous. So, I mean, and I also want to point out that all, so these narrators are actors, right? They're capital A actors with actor training and actor experience. And I don't think that's a coincidence.
Mm-hmm. No.
Yeah, Robin Miles is on my list too, for sure. The Broken Earth trilogy is like one of the first things that I recommend to people who are like, I've never done an audiobook. I'm like, if you like fantasy, this one, this one. And she does, what I love about, like, for me, every great audiobook that I love and get really into and like finish to the end is that she sort of like, it's that feeling of being taken by the hand and sort of like led gently on this journey, right? It doesn't feel like forced upon you, but it doesn't feel like nothing's happening. It's like, they've got this. They've got me. They're bringing me. I felt like brought along. And in fact, I'm listening to a book right now that's doing that, that one of the narrators in this group is working on. It will, is on. It's, I'm listening to it, so it's out. But I'm listening to The Weekend Retreat. I'm not quite finished yet. Gail Shallon is on that, along with an incredible cast.
It's Lisa such a good cast, yeah.
It's so good. It's Lisa Flanagan and Carissa Vacker and Emily Ellett, in addition to Gail. And what they do so beautifully, everyone in that cast, A, you can tell that they communicated because the character voices are so consistent throughout. Like, it's a multicast, and also, like, it's a pretty homogenous group of characters in the sense that, like, they're all of a very similar social class and age and that sort of thing. But still, the little nuances are so clear that anytime someone starts talking, I'm like, oh, I know which character this is, no matter who the narrator is in that chapter. So that's so impressive. But also, there's that sense of, like, they leave just enough space for me to sort of, like, catch up with them. Everyone's really present. Everyone's really connected to the text that they're performing. But there also just feels like this sense of ease that, like, makes me feel really comfortable as a listener and makes me feel really, like, it makes it easy for me to enjoy just, like, sitting back and enjoying the ride, you know?
You brought up Lisa Flanagan. She narrated another of my favorites, Spinning Silver, which is, oh my God, what a tour de force. I mean, there's something like five different POVs. They all have like Russian accents and they're wildly different in terms of like age and gender and personality. And you can tell instantly without any markers who's speaking when the chapter switches. And one of the biggest things for me when I'm listening to an audiobook is, are these characters, are they real human beings or are they characters? You know, so maybe that's what people are trying to say when they say like overperformed or actory or whatever. It's that very fine line of, when I'm listening to this, does it just sound to me like a person talking? And not like they're performing in any way. And Lisa does that gorgeously. Another narrator who does that, I think, is, and I apologize because I don't know how to say her name, Sneha Mathan. Do any of you know her? She narrated The Secrets Between Us. She's another actor who her characters and her character choices, it's just like, you know, you're eavesdropping on someone and they're just like talking off to the side and you wouldn't ever think, oh, it's being performed. It's a line being read as a performance. It's just someone who's talking. And again, she has this incredible range with accents and personalities and genders and choices and it's gorgeous, gorgeous work.
I love that. And you were close on the, it was Sneha Mathan.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Lovely. Lovely.
Yeah, on that note of being able to carry the entire cast of a large cast of characters within a book, I had, and also tying into what you said, Lindsay, about this sort of the MC, like the inviting MC of the show, who will just confidently take you into their under their wing. Well, besides the books that were on my list that Kurt already listed, I'm thinking about two books. So one is called Quen by Alice Albina, narrated by Nicolette Chen. And the other is called The Change by Kirsten Miller, narrated by January Lavoy, which I know Andre and I were like listening to at the same time last year, I think. But both of them are these close third person that really require confident mutability from the narrator, as well as this very vibrant cast full of characters. So a dexterity with dialects and gender spectrum and age spectrum and attitude and all the different things, status, really being able to just like effortlessly shift that dial. But the difference I want to point out between the two of them is that in Quen, there was a sense of realism about every character in equal measure from Nicolette's performance, including Quen is the name of a volcanic island in Scotland, and she's also the island. So we hear from the island. And I believe that she is all of those people. And there's also like verbatim court scenes where there's no text besides the back and forth dialogue, no markers whatsoever, just back and forth. I believe her in every step of the way. What January does with The Change, I also believe her every step of the way, but she takes a step further into the subjective lens, I think. So she uses, I don't want to say she doesn't make the characters fully realized, but there's something she does that really makes me believe I'm seeing those other people in the room from the point of view of the character that we're hearing from. Mm-hmm. And there's an art to that too, that like other actors don't have to deal with, but narrators need to begin to unravel this thing of like, whose story is this? Who are we hearing from? What's the lens that we're seeing through? And how do we manipulate our own embodiment of character to make that lens clear? And I think that's a particular art that we have.
I want to throw a few thoughts into the air and just kind of like nibble our way through the charcuterie board. But I'm curious about a few things. One, where did you feel like this distinction between like reading and performing became clear for you? Two, like, I know several of the folks in this room have a more traditional acting training that they brought to audiobooks, and then a few of us have a different kind of acting background that we brought to audiobooks, and I'm just curious about those transitions, the lessons you found in audiobooks. And finally, like, what have you seen moving between these different mediums that has taught you about the distinctions between audiobooks, other VO, stage acting, film acting? One of the pieces that came up too that I think is going to be true in every medium, and I'm thinking about The Change that Gail just described too, but those shifts around POV, part of the powerful kind of like ammo or fuel that January Lavoy has in creating such clear third person for each character as the shift goes, is the writing. Like, the writing is a significant part in what we're able to bring. I think that, you know, Viola Davis's memoir has to be well written in order for it to accurately reflect her experience, her emotional background. I loved the writing in The Change and how closely it, like, gives us, like, prosaically gives us this context of the world and paints this town that we're in. But so many questions in the air, so many thoughts a bubble. Please, feast.
Okay. So I have a very traditional classical actor training background. I attended Juilliard Drama Division. It was a 4-year. So when I went, they only had the BFA program or the certificate program. And I was right out of high school. I hadn't gone anywhere else before. So I did the BFA track, which really only meant that we also had to do some like liberal arts classes on top of all our actor training stuff. But it was very much, you know, nuts and bolts, voice and speech, movement, acting classes, scene study. We also had like, you know, ballroom dancing and like mask work and clown work. So it was 4 years of boot camp, right? Like theater boot camp. And audio was not part of the training. But I ran through, you know, ton of the classics, Shakespeare, Chekhov, the Greeks. And so I came out, graduated, and did mostly theater for, you know, my adult professional life. And then I started doing audiobooks because Audible came to Juilliard to do a workshop for alum. And I went to it and was like, oh, this is cool. I can do this. So I started working for Audible. This was way before the pandemic, which is when I really dove headfirst into audiobooks. But I would do audiobooks now and then when Audible would send me an email and be like, hey, we have a book, can you do it? And I'd be like, sure, if I could. But it was very few and far between. And when I went into Audible to do those books, I was very, very much of the mindset that I'm just going in to read. I mean, read well and with appropriate, whatever, emotion and pace and all of that. But it was, in my head, it was reading. And it wasn't until COVID hit and shut down all the theaters and I really started to investigate sort of the craft of audiobooks. And I started coaching with like audiobook people, not theater people, that I started to make that connection between, wait, this is the same thing I do on stage. It's a different format, but it involves all of the same inhabiting of the character. And not only that, but there's the added challenge of the narrative voice, right? Which I don't have to do on stage ever, let alone play like every single character. And so what is the narrative voice? It's not just informational. There's a real art to getting inside the narration in a way that it's almost subliminal for the listener. And I mean, like Paul Rubin was huge in terms of my understanding of that shift between acting and reading and how it's never just reading. There's always a point of view. The luxury, I feel like, in audiobooks is that the format is so different from on stage. You don't have to reach the back row. The microphone is like right there. And the finished product often is like in your audience's skull, right? Like how beautifully intimate is that? And you can do things with that that you just can't do on stage or even in film. And to explore the possibilities of that. You know, because a lot of narrative voice are someone's internal thoughts, right? Their internal monologue, their deepest emotional layer. And so what can you do with that? And this medium that gives you the ability to make it, I mean, I used this word before, subliminal, but it's really, sometimes I think that's the best audio performance when it's like the listener isn't hearing words anymore, they're receiving the emotions that the writer is trying to transmit, you know, and the narrator actor is just the conduit for that.
Yeah, I think about how many times like someone will compliment me on a performance and truly like I'm not like a super humble person, but like the real answer is like, well, but that was all in the writing. Mm-hmm. Like everything you're saying mm-hmm. about my performance that you liked, like to me, it was all there. It was in the book already. I didn't have to do anything.
But you were an exceptional conduit, which is a skill in and of itself. It's so funny hearing you talk, Eunice, about like the shift from reading to performance, because I'm realizing like I had to make a different shift, right? Because to me, it was performance from the beginning. And now I'm realizing for the first time, I mean, I think that's just because like where I came from background wise with all this, when I went to Northwestern for theater, so I'm like another like classical theater girly. But the difference is we were in a BA program, and every single freshman, at least when I went there, who studied theater at Northwestern had to take a class in the performance studies department called analysis of performance. And because we were all mature 18-year-olds, we called it anal perf. I was like, who do you have for anal perf? But I'm going to like totally bastardize the whole concept of an anal of our performance studies, of our performance studies department. But a lot of it is like looking at the whole department is about like looking at performance in unconventional areas, right? Like different cultural attitudes about performance and like different folk traditions. And so analysis of performance was all about taking usually non-performable texts, right? Like literature, poetry, you know, biography, like all and like dense texts and turning them into performances. And so I feel like my relationship to that kind of text has always been like from 18 on has been like, oh, this is performable. This is performance text. And even then when I was working as a professional theater actor, I sort of either I got drawn in or it was or it came to me. The work that was like devised or immersive or weird or like whatever, or, you know, alternative. And so it was an interesting shift for me because I went in way too cocky, for one. I didn't get enough training for my first two books. I hope they disappear off the face of the earth. But I went in coming from a background of doing a lot of in-person storytelling. So like folk telling, folk tales, that sort of thing to like groups of people. And immersive theater, but like to bigger groups, like fourth wall breaking stuff where it's like, I see you, I'm looking in your eyeballs and I'm telling you a story. So I was like, oh, I'm just going to take all the techniques I use for telling a story directly to a group of people and do it into a mic. This can be the same thing. It's not the same thing. It's not the same thing at all. There's a lot of through lines, right? But it's for me, I had to take that like sense of performance and storytelling and like, really like pulling the audience along with me because there's a, you know, in my mind, there was a lot of them and being like, oh, I don't have to work so hard. I don't have to push so far out. And in fact, once I started like making it smaller and leaning back a little bit, I feel like that invites the smaller in-ear audience to like move forward to meet you rather than you having to like drag them, grab them by their lapels and drag them in, at least not for the whole book, you know? But it's just fascinating hearing like the different, yeah, having to either be like, oh, I need to like give this more of myself. I need to give this more performance. And for me, I was like, oh, I need to like chill this out a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. It's always been so funny to me hearing about like traditional theater training. My housemate went to Tisch and I feel like I get these jokes about like, it's zip, zap, zop. And your teacher telling you to like, you know, like emotionally purge in the middle of class. And like, that's 4 years of the program.
Find the lie, y'all.
I can't.
Oh my God. But it's been interesting. Having this kind of like roundabout approach for me, because I think like having those moments where I finally am put into a book where I'm like, okay, what does an honest performance feel like? And then understanding like what that kind of ability to be vulnerable, like on demand means, or that ability to like react with the moment means. For me, I feel like I thought when I started that I was performing. My acting background is like middle school improv, and like I took it. It was someone else's directing class in college, and they brought me in as like the actor they were directing for the class, and we did like a scene from The Bear, and there was a fake coordinated slap and everything. So I never really like learned acting in this like structural technique oriented sense. And by the time I got to audiobooks, like most of my speaking experience was like public speaking and spoken word. And that was a lot of what I drew from in terms of like emotional momentum and like what kind of, you know, oral experience am I creating? But I feel like I thought I was performing. I really thought I was performing. And then I'd listen back to something and it would feel disconnected. And I just remember this moment in one of my coaching sessions where we were doing, you do a scene and you do it with like sock puppets. And you're supposed to do it at a 10, just as big as you can go with the sock puppets. And then you do the same scene in an audiobook appropriate context to encourage like big character building, all these things. And I did my sock puppet scene and I was like, yeah. And the coach was like, so did you think that was big? And I was like, now that you've asked, like, Jesus. And
like, based on context clues, I'm going to say no.
I just love imagining like a very like sock puppet, like very subtle sock puppet show, like Punch and Judy, but it's like a kitchen sink drama.
They're right tapping your cigarettes off on the
Frankie and Johnny and sock puppets.
Oh my gosh. But it really, for me, I think was a really fascinating moment because ultimately I did get like a handful of acting techniques, but I think the things that I dig in deepest to really is my psychology degree for me. I feel like when I went to a college where they made us write a lot. It was a horrifying amount of writing that we did. And I feel like I have such a clear, I thought for years that I like read slowly. And what I realized over time, and particularly narrating audiobooks, is that when I read, I hear the text out loud. Mm-hmm. And so for people who can skim through the text quickly, if I try to do that, I'm not processing anything. And so I think it's been digging into that voice and identifying like what the text is telling me and taking my time there. And then from there, like connecting that back to acting techniques and finding where I am and, you know, where my emotional scale is. But that kind of process has been really interesting for me because as I've like started to watch other people go through the journey, there have been little things that like I don't often see that kind of help me identify like what's going on or where are we trying to reach something. One of them is that someone was talking to me about like their read. They, I think, had an audition or preparing a sample, and they wanted to feel a little bit more connected. And I encouraged them to try putting efforts in throughout the text, knowing that it's not something that we would do in audiobooks. The efforts being like the sighs, the gasps, the like frustrated huffs of breath, all those little like nonverbal choices that, you know, we would have naturally. And I think doing that moved them more into their body and let them live through the performance. And so I think that's a lot of where I come to. And weirdly, I think we still land at this same honest lived in experience, right? And ultimately, I think that's what's cool about a lot of formats, but particularly audiobooks, is we're doing the same work in different ways and we can arrive to that same moment in a lot of different ways.
I mean, psychology, writing, acting, they're all ways of examining how people tick.
Right. Can I go back to what you said about how you read, Andre? Like, not as in how you take in the information. It was very interesting to me because I went through many different theater schools, and it wasn't until graduate school in the UK, I guess this is a standardized thing that they do across schools there, that I got a test for what type of learner I am. And the test was auditory kinesthetic for me. So that means I take in information through what I hear and what I do. And I also was undiagnosed ADHD at that point. I think I would have, I don't know, approached so much of my previous education very differently had I known that about myself. Mm. But it is something I think about now as I take in information as a reader. Because in order for me to integrate the story, I need to hear it. So sometimes I'll read it out loud to myself. Recently, I've started to listen text to speech, and that's been really helpful. I'll read as I listen. And at the same time, because 85 things happening in my brain at once, I will be making a Pinterest board of like a visual sort of like image board and a soundtrack. And as I just sort of gather this physicalized and auditory information, often my warm up will be, you know, your typical voice and speech
running through all the different mechanisms of your body, get the instrument warm kind of thing. But then I'll just look at the visual board and I'll listen to my playlist and I'll have already been there in my body and in my ears. And so I'll know where I need to be. Or I'll be in the shower and I'll read the shampoo bottle label in the character's voice that I'm trying on. But stepping into those shoes and hearing those things as a reader first has been a huge part of my process as a narrator. And those are things that I don't think I was trying with theater scripts or film scripts in any way. But I think also thinking about it from the reader's perspective is an important part of my process as a narrator. Like, what will it be like to be a reader of this book, whether they're reading by listening or reading by reading visually? Yeah.
Because in many ways, we are a proxy for that person.
Yeah.
We are doing our job. Yeah.
We're making choices for them that then take. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know there's this school of thought that's like, do as little as possible so that you don't implement your feelings and reactions and whatever onto the listener. We could have a long discussion about that. I hope we dive into that a little. But ultimately, as a subjective human, you have to make some choices about the text when you encounter it, or you will by default, and those will come through. And so you have to take responsibility for the fact that you are making those choices for the listener.
I was going to say, I hope it's a short conversation, because to me, it's simple. Like, how can you not? How can you not bring your humanity to the book that you're reading out loud for another human person? I think that's the essence that people say is missing in text-to-speech, what we're now calling
AI audiobooks. And believe me, it is. Yeah.
Like, that's what's missing, is that piece of humanity. So, like, of course you must. And when we get an article that comes along, like, once a year saying, like, narrator, stop, too much, I don't know how to help those people, but, like, they're not the vast majority of consumers of what we do.
Yeah.
They are not representative of the people who every year discover audiobooks and what an amazing art form it is. They are not representative of why the industry continues to have double digit growth every year for the last 12 years. Like, they're just a loud minority. They wrote an article.
They're loud minorities who have contacts at LitHub. Exactly.
Right. Yeah, like, it's not what we hear from most audiobook listeners.
Yeah. It's so, and journey with me, because I'm sure this is going to sound wild. But when Eunice was speaking earlier, I realized this kind of like bastardized parallel to audiobooks for me is those mid to late 2000s movies like Norbit and Medea, where you've got the same person playing like 12 to 15 different roles throughout the course of the movie. And It's interesting to think about, because, like, I feel like a lot of, you know, the two examples I gave come from humor. There are other examples, like the United States of Tara.
Orphan Black,
exactly. Mm-hmm. But I feel like those are real examples of people actively living different full people versus characters, like Eunice said earlier, within the same story. And I'm always curious that, like, I think I'm uncovering for some listeners that, like, they come to an audiobook and the audiobook, like, opens something for them that clearly needs to be explored in therapy, right? But, like, I feel
that. Providing the service, y'all.
We're here to support. But I you know, not facetiously, I do wonder, like, for someone who wants to hear a story and quote unquote not hear character voices, or quote unquote not hear any performance, I wonder what maybe is fundamentally missing about the medium to them. And maybe that's not the right question, but that's to say that, like, you can have someone who enjoys both like a high comedy film, and I just mean high as in volume, not high as in like prissy, you know, like a comedy film, a classics 2000 like movie, and enjoy something like Moonlight, like these more grounded performances where maybe the dialogue does more lifting than the emotional caliber that the actors are at. And I feel similarly about audiobooks, but I guess it's just pushing me to imagine what changes for people where they get to something so intimate And they're critical of like, you know, oftentimes nuanced performances. It's just the fact of like someone arriving as a multidimensional being in their ears is off-putting. And I don't know. Maybe I don't have all the answers to what.
No, but that do you think means. It's about expectations? Like, if you, for instance, went to go watch Orphan Black and you were expecting Medea, like, you would be like, what is happening right now? Or vice versa. Or if you had never seen a film like that and you were like, I'm going to see a movie, and you sit down and all the characters are played by the same person, you're like, this is not a movie. Like, it's the box of the definition that the listener's approaching the medium from. And I think that's one of the places where we get some of the in-industry resistance to the style changing, is that folks are upset about their expectations being expanded or upturned. And so there's not even an ability to take in what's actually happening in the performance, because stylistically it doesn't match up with what they expect.
You know, I now thinking about the medium part of it that Andre brought up, oftentimes the text that we are performing was not written explicitly to be performed, right? If it's a film or if it's a play or if it's whatever, that playwright or that screenwriter wrote down and specifically was like, I'm writing text for people to perform. But a lot of the books are, you know, written not necessarily with that in mind, with the idea of just somebody quietly reading to themselves. So I think that I wonder how much that has to do with how people react to different performance styles in the medium, that it might feel more put on or whatever, or not enough, because we are trying to bring our performance techniques wherever we gleaned them from, and we are trying to bring our storytelling ability and our connection to a text that may or may not be super well suited to be performed.
I'm yes-anding both of you, because I think you're both right. And it goes back to the thing about those articles that I disagree with the most, which is the simple fact that they seem to think that all audiobooks should be performed the same, that there should be any level playing field. And the truth of what we do is that we take a text and we identify what it is, and then we perform what is in front of us. None of us approach a text the exact same way every single book. We look at what it is and we do what we need to do to match what that book is. And so, you know, there are going to be differences with to what degree you might be putting on character voices or using accents or getting perhaps melodramatic sometimes. Like, I'm sorry, but when I'm doing my Russian Mafia Bear Shifters Mpreg books, subtle and nuanced isn't going to do it. Like, those are meant to be like Saturday morning cartoons for adults. Mm-hmm. You make the characters big, you know?
Yes.
But I wouldn't do the same thing when I'm, you know, getting a YA from Harper that needs a lot more nuance and a lot more groundedness. You do different things for different books. So it's possible these people who are writing these articles just didn't like the books.
I think so. Going off the expectations thing that Gail brought up, I feel like this is a little bit of a tangent, but I feel like expectations are part of why audiobook narrators don't get the same amount of respect as actors and other mediums do, because our expectations of being read to, and no disrespect meant to, like, parents reading or grandparents reading or librarians reading, but it's a very different thing for someone to crack open a book and start reading to their child, right? There's the acknowledgement that I'm reading you a book. I haven't prepared anything. I'm just reading the words as they come. Here are the pictures. And there's a very natural kind of reading aloud cadence that human beings fall into. It's at least in the English language. It's like the sort of sing-songy kind of thing that happens, which is completely different when you're an actor narrator trying to inhabit the text and trying to have it seem to the listener, even if it's one of those books that Lindsay was talking about, that is not meant to be read aloud. We are always trying to make it sound like it's coming out naturally. It's spontaneous, or, you know, at least I try to make it sound spontaneous, even if it's not written that way. And I also think that there's something, this is like one of my pet obsessions that I've been sort of wrestling with. There is something in the physical act of reading a sentence off a page that inhibits the naturalness of how it sounds. And the theater actors know that there is a massive shift that occurs between when you are on your feet with your binder in hand, on book, you're moving around, trying to like connect with your other actors and trying to figure out where you're going. You're still stuck to the script. And then the magic that happens when you're off book, right? Mm-hmm. And it's not just the fact that you get to get your hands free because you're not holding your script. There is a connection that happens between your brain and your heart when you are off book that is so difficult to grab when you are physically married to the page. And as audiobook narrators, we are always physically married to the page. And so it is the subtlest shift, but it makes all the difference in the world when you can read sentences off the page, but make it come out and sound to the listener like it is just occurring to you. The thoughts are just coming at you the way that they do in real life. And it's not written down at all. And of course, there's the understanding. The listener knows that you haven't memorized your whatever 12 finished hours. But it's that suspension of disbelief. Oh, you don't do that for every book? Wait, do you? But the skill in making it sound like it's just coming through you is, it's like what you were saying before we started, Lindsay. It takes so much skill as an actor to make it sound that honest and that natural and that free flowing, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's something that I think most people, or I guess a lot of people listening to audiobooks without any knowledge of the job of the narrator or the industry, it's not even part of what they're expecting necessarily, because their expectations were formed by mom reading me a bedtime story or the school librarian reading me a story. And so to them, that's the bar, and it's a low bar, you know? So the respect that I feel like should be given to the form of acting in audiobooks, which in my experience is the hardest form of acting I have certainly ever encountered, to do it in that organic, spontaneous, fresh way. That's the disconnect, because you have Mrs. you know, Hamilton reading me this book in fifth grade in library class, and then you have, you know, actor narrator trying to ascend the heights of making it sound like these stories and these characters are lived and spontaneous. There's a huge gap there, and I think a lot of the public doesn't understand that this mountain exists. Am I making sense here?
Yeah. I mean, you're like explaining the art of the illusion, the magic trick that we do. That is, it's a reflection. Yeah.
Yeah. And in theater and film, there's less of that because people are accustomed to what good acting looks and sounds like in those mediums, you know? And so the expectations are higher there. And if someone comes on stage and they're like, they're acting a character, you know, then they're like, that's bad acting. But if someone in an audiobook is like, blah, 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 they're just like, oh, that's just like when mom was being that character, right. You know? And I can accept that because that's what I'm have internalized as being read aloud to.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. The mismatch in expectations, the like different standards for what strong performances look like across mediums. I love this. I want to come down to our last two questions as we wrap up this episode. And I'll throw both out. And I'd love to do a little round robin kind of situation. You can answer either or both. You know, up to you. We love a little treat at the end of the day. So, one, what kinds of acting challenges do you want to see more of in your work? Or two, you have a platform to speak directly to authors and listeners. What would you say? I can start us off with
hot seat. Yeah.
My answer to question number one. I'm gonna try to contextualize this backwards and hopefully give like fullness to what this looked like. There's the movie out right now, American Fiction, and it's based on a novel by Percival Everett called Erasure. And he's written like 24 books, and Pan Macmillan in the UK just took a handful of those and turned them into audiobooks. I did a novel. The title is Percival Everett by Virgil Russell, by Percival Everett. And it is a whole mockery is not the right word, but it's very much a critique of the structure of a novel and the idea of narrative voice and what is expected in detail and all these different things. There's chemical equations in the book. There's one chapter that opens with a mathematical equation and then is just a 3 pages listing words that end in ing. Like, it's all over the place. But what was interesting about it, and one of the things that I'm kind of having, like, it shows up and then I see it in the PDF and I'm like, I'm going to hate this. And then I turn in the files and I'm like, that's the best thing I ever did, is I think these like breakings of form in literature, because I get to then participate in the critique. And that feels like its own kind of like new shade of performance almost. A lot of the book is structured as a guy comes to visit his older dad in a nursing home. And the dad in the nursing home is like, I wrote this book. This book is what you would have written if you wrote. And then he starts telling the book. And throughout the course of the book, it becomes a kind of like, you know, Percival Everett says it's not autobiographical, but it becomes a kind of like, oh, it's the author writing a thing about his dad who has written a thing about the author, or that the author would have written if he wrote. And they play. There's a moment that's like, you know, reader, I know that it's been confusing who the narrator is, and I'm so sorry, but we're going to clarify that right now. I am the narrator. And I'm like, okay, Jesus Christ. Like, oh my God.
Oh, good.
And that has been so, it's so satisfying, because I read as the father, like I got to do I put on this kind of like older black man thing, and I did a lot of the book sounding like this. But as we like move through the narrative to like, who is who, what is what, the voice shifts, the voice changes. And ultimately I am also participating in this thing of like, I am not the person I am. You are hearing me as like, this is the person you'd hear me as if I was the person you thought. It's this fun cycle. And I'm like, I want more. Give me more of that. Let me be part of this artistic criticism that you're doing. Like, the less sense the book makes, the more fun I'm going to have in there. Like, throw it my way.
Continuing with what Andre just said, I just finished prepping a book that's dealing with a lot of similar shifts in how we start to trust the narrator, what we believe of the narrator, who the narrator is. And it is actually dual narration, so we do hear from another voice at some points, but it's really playing with the form of literature through character, and so I'm excited to get in the booth with that, having heard what you're experiencing with it and what you're playing with. My response to, you said to the listener or to the author, I would say to anybody in the audiobook production chain with power, creative power, is to think about how we're consciously adapting for audio. That if we really truly just need a voice to read a text on a page, obviously they're not going to be keep paying the humans to do that. So as we humans stay involved, how do we continue to make this an art form? And how can we be brave enough to try things we haven't tried before, to trust our listeners to adapt with us, and to think about when we shift senses, when we're going from something that is visual or is, I don't know, reading also almost feels like this, like there's this like film between the story and the senses, and the reader gets to pull it in how they might pull it in. But when it's an audiobook, your ears are the first place that we're hitting. So how are we consciously thinking about that? All the way from the author who goes, I want this to be an audiobook someday. So I'm going to have awareness of that as I write this, whether that's setting in alternate edits when it gets to the audiobook phase, or whether that's bearing in mind how I talk about how my characters speak or how I write syntax on the page, like read something out loud that you've written, please, and see how it rolls off the tongue or does not. Otherwise, as Kurt has said, we're not going to be able to do our jobs very well. Or, you know, all the way through to the listener, like, can I embrace the art form that this is? Can I go on the journey of suspension of disbelief that this is? Because you don't think a movie's real when you watch it. You don't think a theater is real when you watch it, but there's some conceit that you buy into that allows you to go on the journey that takes up space and time in the way that that art form does of storytelling. And this is the same thing. It's the same. We talked about the written word being not always written to be heard, but ultimately storytelling goes back to an auditory experience. So as creatures, we want to consume this in a conceit of I'm willing to go on this ride and I'm willing to take in what you offer me. It's an art form that asks for a lot of trust. And so that's what I'd ask. Trust that art form and that process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I also really love playing with form. And Andre, you said a challenge. This isn't so much a challenge because it's the thing I enjoy most and find a lot of like ease in. So I'm doing the question wrong. But I especially love, and I talked a little bit about this in my first episode with the narrator roundtable, but like I have been having such a love affair recently with second person. It is my favorite gift. It is the tastiest treat. Poor Kurt, I texted Tim and another friend the other day when I had like because this book I just wrapped in the very last chapter, there's a sudden second person shift for like the end part of the epilogue. And it's so satisfying. And I especially love it in like twisty or morally complicated books because it brings in an element of complicity for the audience. It's like, oh, you're not off the hook. You're here too. You're here viewing and like quietly approving of all of my choices, aren't you? And it reminded me of the moment in House of Cards, the first episode of the second season, where the whole first season, Kevin Spacey's character has been like talking directly to the audience the whole time. The whole first episode, he doesn't. And then in the last second, he catches the camera's eye in the mirror and says, oh, you thought I forgot about you, didn't I? Like, didn't you? And just that moment of like, he sees me. So that is my favorite thing in literature when like I, as a narrator, get to be like, hey, you, I see you. I'm looking at you, like auditorily looking at you. That's my favorite. So like more of that forever and ever. But anything that plays with like that like is a departure from what we traditionally think of as like a literary format, like whether it's a challenge or whether it makes our jobs more fun or whatever, like it's a playground. And as to Gail's point, also having the support to make that possible, right? Whether it's time or resources or whatever, or an extra narrator or something in terms of like music or sound, whatever support we would need in order to make that choice really sing, that marrying of like playing with form and also playing with other elements, I think is just like the best. Let's do more of
it. I love it. And you departed from form when you answered the question.
Sorry, not sorry.
As far as challenges are concerned, like, I know I can't call myself a baby narrator anymore, but in a lot of ways, I still feel like one. So I'll say I'm a toddler narrator. And I feel like there are just so many challenges to be had in the variety of work that there is to do. And so I just, like, I don't know that I want to issue any special challenges except for, like, I'd like to do more nonfiction. I'd like to do more non-romance. I'd like to try a children's book, like all of these things that I haven't done yet that can still challenge me as I grow in this career, like those are welcome. And to speak to not even authors, I'm going to talk to listeners, especially the ones who like to write articles. And I said this earlier in the season as well. There is no such thing as good or bad. There are things I like, and there are things I don't like. And if I don't like something, I don't need to write an article to convince other people to also not like it. It's okay to not like something. It's okay to like something. Doesn't mean it's good or bad.
It's such a big question. And I feel like after all the brilliant things you all have said, what I feel very simple. And in terms of the challenges that I would want more of, it's the same in audiobooks for me as it would be in theater or any other form of acting, which is I want more of these deep, complex, rich, meaty characters with these incredible stories and these arcs and psychological journeys or real journeys, and where you can live another life. You know, like that's why I wanted to become an actor when I was in high school, because I was like, you can do this with language and research and imagination. You can slip into another life as another human being who maybe lived like hundreds of years before you did, and imagine what it would be like to be someone else, right? I want that. It's not audiobook specific. It's about being an actor. And what I would say to anyone is that narrating audiobooks is acting. And it drives me crazy when people just kind of say things like, oh, well, you know, that's not really acting. I'm like, why not? What is your criteria for saying that? Why is it not acting? When we are, like I said, trying to inhabit these new worlds, these new lives, these new points of view, and take them seriously and present them to our audience, the listeners, as a human being, right? Okay, this is also a tangent, but sort of related to what I'm saying. So my son was recently in Beauty and the Beast in his high school musical. And there was one performance where sitting behind us, there was a little, I think it was a little boy sitting on his mom's lap who started the show very apprehensive about the beast. He was really, really scared. And he kept saying like, when is he coming out? Is he going to be very scary? And so he was very scared up until like halfway through. And then at the end, when the beast and Gaston are fighting, he yelled out. He was like, don't hurt my friend, the beast.
Oh my gosh.
And I was like, right there. That's the magic of theater, right there. And the same is true for audiobooks, where you can change someone's mind and life. Here's a grown-up version of that. So Angels in America by Tony Kushner, one of my favorite plays ever written, one of the oral histories on it, there was the story of a young woman who was a student at Brigham Young University, which is a, I think, predominantly or entirely Mormon school. And somehow they went to see a performance of Angels in America, like mind blown already, right? Okay. So, but at the Q&A at the end, the actor playing Prior Walter was on stage, and this woman, this young woman, stands up, Mormon, Brigham Young student, she stands up and she says something like, you know, all my life, I've been told by my parents, my teachers, my church, everyone in my life has told me that I should be afraid of you and I should stay away from you. But after seeing this, I love you. And it was the most touching thing. They hugged, and like this performance changed this woman's life and how she's going to live her life moving forward. And I think that can happen whether it's theater or film or audiobooks. That's acting, right? That's telling stories, and that is that is getting inside the heart of your audience, your listener, and making them feel like the world has opened. And you see it differently after the performance than before. And so I'm like, that's a very long-winded way of saying audiobook narration is acting, because that's what we do too. That's
beautiful.
It.
Pitch perfect.
Also, Angels in America, the Norbit of Broadway dramas. Actors yes! play a lot of different
yes!
roles.
Oh my God. Exactly.
Incredible. Eunice, thank you so much for joining us today. Such a fantastic conversation. Can't wait to have it out in the world. Thank you for joining us at the Narrator Roundtable. If you want to join the conversation, find us on social media or visit our website, narratorroundtable.com, to submit a question or topic of discussion for a future episode. What's on your mind? We want to talk about it.
The Narrator Roundtable is produced and hosted by Andre Santana, Deanna Anthony, Gail Shallon, Kurt Graves, and Lindsay Dorcas. All copywritten material is shared with permission. Music and sound effects are licensed through Storyblocks Audio. All opinions shared are those of the individuals and do not reflect the positions or policies of any company or organization with which they happen to be associated.